of Planets and Fairground Rides by Leopard. In the last part we covered a little bit about the Earth and the Moon. We have established there should be a common center of rotation as both rotate around this common center. If our understanding of gravity is correct and if our understanding of motion is correct, we should be able to work out why the Earth and Moon haven't collided. To go a little bit further, the Moon orbits the Earth in 27.32 days. Thus it takes 2,360,448 seconds to complete one orbit. Thus the angular velocity is 8.473 × 10^7 rads/s1. Because from observation we know the Earth and Moon are not colliding, there is something preventing this. We know the force acting due to gravity between the bodies is 1.98 × 1020 N. Thus both bodies must have an equal and opposite force pulling them outwards. Because these numbers are large and I struggle to get the Moon, let alone the Earth as well, into my kitchen, let's consider something a bit smaller and familiar. Take a small weight, fix it to a length of string, and, outside, away from windows, swing it around so it describes a circle, the center of which is your hand rotating horizontally around a vertical axis, roughly thus. Now, look at the stone and ask yourself what is going on here and what the stone would like to do, in the horizontal plane. At an initial time the stone is located at P0, moving with an angular velocity of omega, which is constant. With the known radius r we can work out the actual velocity u, which is variable in direction but fixed in magnitude. What we need is the length of the arc shown in purple. This combined with the time taken to describe that arc can be used to determine the magnitude of the velocity. The length of this arc is equal to the angle in radians multiplied by the radius. If we set the angle to be 1 radian and the radius to be 1 meter, we thus can see the arc length is 1 meter. If we consider this over 1 second with the angular velocity omega equals 1 rads/s1, we have a velocity with a magnitude of 1 ms/s1. Consider what would happen without the string, shown in green. The stone would continue to travel in a straight line to the position shown as P1. Again in a horizontal plane, we will ignore the fact it will also fall to the ground for now. Newton's laws tell us that unless we provide a force, the stone will keep going with a constant velocity. We can observe this effect by letting go of the stone and watching where the stone goes, duck. After replacing the kitchen window, we need to consider why the stone is describing the arc. What we have is a force acting on the stone provided by the string sufficient to change the velocity such that the final location moves from P1 to P2. This force, towards the center of the arc being followed by the stone, is called centripetal force of center-seeking force. This is determined thus. Fc equals mac equals mv2r. Here v is the magnitude of the velocity, that is the speed. If our stone has a mass of 1 kg, this resolves to centripetal acceleration of 12.1 equals 1 ms2 and a centripetal force of 1 n. So we know the force exerted by the string on the stone, acting towards the center of the arc, is 1 n. This force will cause the stone to describe the arc with the stated angular velocity and mass. Centrifugal force. So what is centrifugal force? Well, this is where it gets interesting. Note the stone is moving under a force provided by the string, the centripetal force. As described above, the stone causes a reaction of equal magnitude and opposite direction in the string, pulling the string outwards. This is the centrifugal force. It is, however, something of a pseudo force, as there is, in practice, no force causing the stone to move away from the center of the arc being described. This can be seen by cutting the string and the stone will move as described above to P1. If there was a centrifugal force acting on the stone would move away from the arc. This force, however, is real when you consider the string, or anything else fixed by the stone. Consider the classic water in a bucket experiment, for the purposes of which we will freeze the water to a block of ice so it acts as a solid. Specifically consider the forces acting. As we have seen, the string provides a centripetal force inwards on the container. The container in turn provides a centrifugal reaction force on the string. But what about the ice? The string is not connected to the ice, so cannot provide any force. Yet the ice also moves. To describe the arc, the container provides the centripetal acceleration to change the velocity of the ice. The ice in turn exerts a reaction acting against this, again the centrifugal force. So, centrifugal force is not really a force as such, it's the reaction, Newton's third law, to the centripetal force that basically balances the equation, which will vanish the instant the centripetal force is removed. Okay, back to the Earth and the Moon. Previously we determined the force between these two bodies, which rotate around a common center. Both experience the same force. As we have seen, both are at a different distance from this center of rotation, and their movement describes a circle around it, the Moon with a larger radius than the Earth. This force, provided by gravitational attraction, is the centripetal force acting upon both bodies. Now, if the physics is true, we should be able to use the work we have shown to prove the orbits are correct. In effect, we know the distance, because we have measured it, we know the orbital period, because we can observe it, and we know the force acting on the bodies. If these all add up, the maths works. So let's try it. Fc equals Mach equals mv2, r. Consider the Moon first. 1.98 times 1020 n equals 7.342 times 1022 kilograms v2, 384,400,000 meters. We can rearrange to determine the velocity, which we can then compare to the observed velocity. V2 equals 1.98 times 1020 n 384,400,000 meters, 7.342 times 1022. This provides a velocity of 1.18.16 ms1. Now, what is the observable velocity of the Moon? We determine this based on the fact we know it completes on orbit in 27.3 days, which equates to 2,358,720 seconds. We know the circumference of the orbit is 2,415,256,432 meters, which means we have a velocity of 1.023.97 ms1. Now, okay, these are not exactly the same. However, given the slight disagreements between various sources of data on the Moon's orbit, because it's not circular for one thing, and various rounding errors, is pretty much spot on. The force of gravity, as determined by the relationship between the mass of the Earth and Moon, the gravitational constant and the distance between them, is pretty much the same as the force required to provide a centripetal acceleration required to keep the Moon going around the Earth. This demonstrates two things. Firstly, why the Moon goes around the Earth, or more accurately, why the Earth and the Moon go around their common center of mass. And secondly, why the orbit is basically circular. Note, this also works for elliptical orbits, which in practice all orbits are. The proof of this dives into calculus, though, so will not be handled in detail here. You can, however, see how it will work from the above. As the orbit increases in distance, the centripetal force will reduce, as will the angular momentum. These balance out, so the object will arc back on its orbit. Newton also observed that for such orbits, the area described by the arc in a period of time is constant regardless of which part of the orbit you look at. In the next part, we will consider our first practical question. Copyright Leopard 2020.